Good afternoon, you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon here for Monday, the 20th of June, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown, filling in for Laura Scanley, who should be here momentarily. Today, Pete the Cake, Kyle Brenner will be here with an update on Only Fools Run at Midnight. We'll find out about Alaska food tours. I'll talk with author Diana Martin about her new book, Night Rider's Almanac, Bird Note, and Music More today on a Juno Afternoon. With the forecast for tonight, rain likely and low temperatures around 51 degrees. Forecast for Tuesday, numerous showers, high temperatures around 63 degrees. Wednesday, cloudy skies with isolated showers. And Thursday, cloudy skies with high temperatures around 68 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. lawmakers hope to create institutional change at the Indian Health Service with a bill meant to protect whistleblowers, increase oversight, and implement leadership changes. The legislation was discussed at length in Rapid City, South Dakota last week. Lee Strubinger talked to a few people following a Senate Indian Affairs Committee field hearing Friday and has this report.
Several hours of testimony and hearings on what it's like to receive care from IHS was meant to give lawmakers an idea of the culture at several Great Plains area hospitals. Congressional officials say the conversations will help shape the IHS Accountability Act of 2016. David Plume from Pine Ridge calls the bill progress.
You know, I hope that it improves the quality of health care. It's a step-by-step process. Certainly isn't going to happen overnight, but, you know, this is... I've heard them say some things that I've never heard our elected officials say before that is promising to me, but it's a wait and see also.
Plume says he agrees that resources need to be better utilized, but he says Congress also needs to properly fund the IHS. Danelle Smith is an attorney for the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska. She says she expects the bill to pass, but IHS regulations have been created before.
IHS has not always implemented them fully or in the way that they were intended, so that's going to be the key. And how timely is that going to be? Because we have these patient care issues happening now, today, and so the solutions need to be fast, and we can't sit around and wait for a year for regulations to be developed before anything happens. In the meantime, you know, we have patients that are dying on the road and not receiving the care that they deserve.
Smith says the bill is a good first step, but she doesn't believe more funding can happen until the IHS is accountable. An official with the Department of Health and Human Services says they are moving aggressively to strengthen the delivery of quality care at IHS facilities, and lawmakers have vowed to fix the issue of mismanagement. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in South Dakota.
Hundreds of people attended a recent meeting in Winnipeg called the Pathways to Reconciliation Conference. The gathering comes 1 year after Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission issued its report on the impact of residential schools. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
That commission also made 94 recommendations, all of which the federal government has pledged to implement. But Chief Robert Joseph says getting that done, as well as addressing the high rates of poverty, disease, and incarceration among Canada's Indigenous people, is not a short-term project and will require years of ongoing effort. About 400 people attended the conference held at the University of Winnipeg, among them residential school survivor John Custer from Northern Saskatchewan.
I like listening to other people's stories. In this way, when I learn from other people, I could pass it on to my grandchildren, and it helps me in the healing process.
Native leaders do say there are encouraging signs in addition to promises made by the federal government. They include more money for First Nations housing, education, and employment, and steps taken to give Native people more control over child welfare. The conference also heard from Indigenous leaders from other countries who said more work is needed to maintain public awareness and address inequalities. A recent opinion poll found that a growing number of non-Indigenous Canadians believe Indigenous people experience discrimination on a regular basis as much as or worse than that faced by other minorities. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Tribes and Native groups are observing a day of prayer for sacred sites. On Friday, Native people recognized Snoqualmie Falls in Washington State as a sacred place to protect. The tribal gathering place has long been used for prayer and healing. The site is listed on the National Register of Historic Places as a traditional cultural property. In Colorado, the Native American Rights Fund held an event this morning, which included a moment of silence in honor of the many sacred places being threatened, damaged, or destroyed. A National Day of Prayer for Native Sacred Sites is held annually in June. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who have their day one at nativenews.net. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Lori Scandling here with our producer, Jeff Brown, in the studio, taking a look at the weather forecast for the remainder of the week. It's going to be much like it is right now, mostly cloudy, with scattered showers or isolated showers. And as we learned last week, talking with the National Weather Service folks, those definitions have a specific meaning. But for us, it means there will be some rain now through the remainder of the week and probably into the weekend. Glad you're with us. Right now in our studio, we have three folks who work right here at K2. Sarah Schaefer, who is the development director, P.K. Kalbrenner, who is an accounts manager, and Annie Bartholomew, who is a producer. And we are here to talk about, ta-da, only fools run at midnight, but we want people who are not foolish also to run at midnight, correct? Who wants to talk about the specifics first?
The specifics in terms of when it is and who we're expecting.
Yeah. Well, and where should people show up and what are some of the expectations? This is, what, the 25th year or something that's pretty...
30th.
30th.
It's the 30th anniversary.
But the first year that all the proceeds will be going to KTOO Public Media.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, we'll talk about that in a moment then, PK. So, Sarah, talk about when, where, who, how much...
Well, so the run takes place, of course, at midnight, the 25th, that's the Saturday coming up, and registration is opening at 10:30 in Centennial Hall, so there's going to be a big gathering. We encourage costumes distinctively because there's also going to be a fun costume judging. This event has a 30-year legacy, so I think people are really looking forward to it, and KTOO is so excited to be hosting it this year. So,
well, I certainly recall some stunning costumes, particularly group costumes,
yes,
that have been featured in the past. So, PK, you said this is the first time in the 30-year history that all of the proceeds will be coming to the KTOO stations. Where in the past have those funds gone? What other nonprofits have benefited from this annual event?
So for the last, I believe it was 13 years, the event was with Southeast Alaska Independent Living. And last year we did sort of a shared event as it passed hands from SAIL to KTOO. So this will be KTOO's first year running it independently.
So that the responsibility goes with the benefit then. If you're going to reap the proceeds, then you then have to organize it. So,
and that said, on that note, we are still looking for volunteers to help us do flagging for the event. Volunteers will get a free T-shirt if you're into that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And also that warm, fuzzy feeling that comes with helping your local public radio station raise funds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, come on, we all have a T-shirt. Not that we couldn't use another one. In fact, I saw a T-shirt recently that a colleague's mother had made, and she had probably 20 of the Only Fools Run at Midnight T-shirts created in a quilt pattern.
And actually that quilt has been generously donated to
made
us this year for the
here.
Event. So you'll get to see that hanging at Centennial Hall.
Yeah. Fantastic. I know it's a piece of history for sure. So who can talk about where volunteers are needed and where they should look to hook up with somebody who can help give them an assignment? Meaning, what is the route and is that where you need helpers?
Oh, we definitely encourage student volunteers to get in contact with us right before the event, or so we can basically assign them a task. And we would love for volunteers to be there at least 10:15 the night of, so we can give them an orientation and make sure that they're put in the right spot. We have definitely quite a few tasks still to fill. Registration, we are expecting quite a few hundred people to register. Of course, we encourage everyone to pre-register online. That's possible if you go to our website, www.ktoo.org. There's a link there where you can register conveniently before, so you don't have to wait in line. You still will want to pick up your T-shirt the night off if you are one of the lucky ones.
T-shirts for the first 550, and the event tends to draw upwards of 600 and 700 people. So
holy,
if you do want a T-shirt, it's to get pre-registration is the way to go.
It's the way to go if you want to secure your T-shirt. So that's and we there's our they can either email us directly, Sarah S. Sarah is with an H at kto.org or PK. And what's your email?
PK@coastalaska.org.
Just we'll PK@coastalaska.org or Sarah with an H, S, at KTOO.org.
That's
correct. Annie, what's your role in this shindig?
So last year I was kind of the DJ and I announced people coming through the finish line. It was my first Fool's Run. I'd always been out of town on a family trip, so it was really cool to be there on stage. I have this old costume from the play Yeast Nation that happened at Perseverance that I've, like, held on to since high school, just, like, pink with, like, these green stripes on it. So everybody looks outrageous, even if you aren't into costumes. It's fun to see the parents there with their kids. There were a lot of superheroes there last year, a lot of group teams, like you'd said. The one that I remember the best was this whole group of people who were, like, heads of animals, you know, that you might see on, like, Don Young's office in D.C. Like, you had your, like, moose and your deer, but you also had, like, a unicorn and a snake. And just, it was this group of, like, 10 or 12 people that was totally fabulous. And we have lots of really cool prizes for people.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to win, but there are prizes for, like, groups and things like that. And then at the end of it, it was really crazy because some of the people just show up and register, but they don't actually come in for the costume contest, or they show up at the costume contest late. And then you go outside where everybody is at the starting line at midnight, and that whole, like, Boinkles Road is just, like, packed with people on the grass, and the gun goes off, and then people just run down the road. It's insane. And then, of course, my role at the end was to announce people coming through the finish line. So it's just this really positive event. You know, you don't have to be a runner to do it. You don't have to attempt. There's going to be a 5K as well, which does
5K
get a little bit
1 mile.
More
yeah.
competitive. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, this is just kind of in the spirit of doing a positive all-ages event that happens at midnight in downtown Juneau. So I'm probably going to dig my Yeast Nation costume out again. But there'll probably be some surprises.
Sounds like you will literally and figuratively be the color person there, Annie. So how long is the course? What should people expect if they expect to go the whole course? You mentioned a 1 mile and a 5K, which is about 3 miles. What is the regular course length?
Well, people can choose either the 1 mile or the 5K.
Oh, so it is a choice mm-hmm. between those two.
Yeah.
So it's pretty short then. It will last maybe 30 minutes or so then.
Yeah, it's relatively short. The 5K is really fun and tends to wind through a bunch of neighborhoods up above the high school. And it's a really fun way to support public media in Juneau, and it's a really fun way to come out and kind of celebrate Solstice also, since Solstice happens tomorrow and it's mm-hmm. Tuesday. It'll be kind of an opportunity to embrace that on the weekend. And so people get to choose whether they want to do the 5K or the 1 mile. And while there will be a prize for the first place, I believe, in both the 5K and the 1 mile, mm-hmm. First place runner, not everybody runs. And there's a lot of people that walk, and there's people that come in wheelchair or whatever. So it's not necessarily, I wouldn't call it a severely competitive race. It's really more of a fun run.
It's really an event
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a race. What is the cost of registration?
So that's the nice benefit. If you pre-register, either with a form or online, it's $20. And the night of, it's going to be $25.
You said a form or online. Where would a form be dropped off? Here at K2 then?
We have some in the lobby, of course. We're always happy to engage with our patrons right here. But there are also forms at
the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter. both of the Alaska Club sites, downtown and in the valley, and at Pevitt's Health and Fitness.
Yep.
So 15 pre and 20 at the event.
Or 20 pre and 25 at the event.
Oh, 20, pardon me, at 25. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it definitely pays to pre-register then. And what about, let's say, a participant is a parent pushing a stroller. Does the stroller have to pay, or is that a passenger? What are some of those, like if you bring your little one,
That sounds like a passenger to me.
I would think so, too. Yeah.
Depends if they're wearing a costume or not.
Yeah. if they want to be in the costume contest, no.
If they're not going to move on two legs, I think, you know, and they're, like, really tiny and they rather sleep in a stroller, I think we're in
there. There you go. There's the, there's the definition, I suppose. What else should people know about the event? They should show up no later than you said about volunteers, no later than 10:15 that
costume
night.
Costume judging, I think, is at 11.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Costume judging is at 11. And, of course, everyone who is wearing costume puts a lot of time and effort into their costumes. We definitely encourage them to be there for the costume judging. I think that is a lot of fun. I think we volunteered Annie to moderate that this year, so we're really excited to have that in-house talent that we can also feature at the event, now where it is a KTOO event. And, the run... we all go outside for the beginning of the run, and that's going to be at exactly midnight. So
if you're wearing a costume, be there a little bit before 11. Well, let's repeat where people can find out how to register and, moreover, how to contact the volunteer coordinators. So why don't each of you say your email again in case folks didn't catch that a little bit earlier.
So why don't we direct anybody who's interested in volunteering can email Sarah.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Which is
Sarah with an H, S, at KTOO.org.
Okay.
You can also pick up a registration form at either of the Alaska Club locations, Pavitt Health and Fitness, or the Nugget Alaska Outfitter.
And this year, all proceeds go to KTOO organization, which is more than just a single station.
It's KTOO, KXLL,
KRNN, and, of course, Alaska Public Media, which brings you television.
And just kind of a fun note, the event will be happening simultaneously in Sitka and Ketchikan as well to support their public media stations. So this is a little bit of a Southeast
regional event this year, yes.
It's a harmonic convergence. Mm-hmm.
So if you have one thing that I want to say, though, if you are thinking about an elaborate costume, that's always welcome. If you could leave your glitter at home, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Centennial Hall doesn't love glitter.
They don't like glitter.
Glitter
and so
alert.
Just put that out there on the air. It's just, if we can do it without glitter this year, that would be wonderful.
I would not have thought to have asked that, so thank you for bringing it up. We're talking about the Fool's Run at Midnight, 30th annual event. This Saturday night, they start at Centennial Hall. Costume judging is at 11. Volunteers are still needed. If you don't have an opportunity to sign up for either volunteering or running, show up early by 10:15, get registered, and or volunteer. Thanks for working on this, women. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Fools rushing where angels fear to tread, and so I come to you, my love, my heart above my head. Oh, I see the danger there, but if there's a chance for me, then I don't care. Fools rushing where wise men never go, but wise men never fall in love. So how are they to know when we met? Girl, I felt my life begin, so open up your heart and let this fool rush in. Who's
mansion where wise men never, never, never go. Ah, oh, but wise men never fall in love, so how are they to know? Oh, when we met, girl, I felt my life begin. So open up your heart and let this fool rush in. Just open up your heart and let this fool rush on in. Open up your heart because I'm coming in. Just open up your heart and let this fool rush in.
Fools Rush In. That's a great song. Thanks for picking that, Jeff. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandlin with you on a gray Monday. And with me in the studio now are Karen Wright and Lucy Nelson. They are co-owners of Alaska Food Tours, which, as we were chatting about it, I realized is a dream job. Karen, why don't you describe what Alaska Food Tours is?
So Alaskan Food Tours is a walking downtown, a walking tour of downtown Juneau, where we stop at various restaurants and food locations along the way and taste some of the most wonderful foods that Juneau has to offer. But we also fit in a cultural compound and a historical component to it as well. So you get a really good, rich sense of Juneau history. You get a behind-the-scenes look at a couple of different locations here in town that everybody wants to get in to see, like Heritage Roasting Coffee Company, and get to see a slime line over at Taku Smokeries. And then you also get to taste some of the fantastic food that Juneau has to offer that you may not know about or may not have tried. So it's really a fun tour that's great for locals and visitors both.
Lucy, how was the food selected and the location selected? That must have been a very enjoyable duty. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, we have had a great time tasting different restaurants and meeting lots of owners of the restaurants and trying to come up with different ideas about which restaurants we should stop at. We purchased the business last year, and the business was not operating last year, and there were some suggestions already about, you know, how it was operated before, and we contacted those owners first. So that's how we went about looking at places.
And did you then put into place your own personal preferences, or what were the tipping points in terms of deciding where those stops would be? Either one of you can talk about that, because I think there is a wonderful food scene downtown, and those might be some difficult choices.
There were some really difficult choices about which ones to choose, which not to choose. One of the things that we looked for is to make sure that it was a unique place, not something you could get everywhere else. And we wanted to have some really unique tastings in that as well. So one of the places that we're highlighting along the tour is Deckhand Dave's, which is a brand new business opened up by some local young men, and Dave McCaslin. And he has perfected the salmon taco, and it was love at first bite. I'll tell you what, it was just an amazing taco. You bite into that thing and you're just like, ah. So it, you know, and we looked for some really wonderful, unique flavors and tastings and some combinations, some heavy stuff, some light stuff, and some things that you might not have even, you know, you've probably driven by, looked at it, thought about it, but not ever stopped in and tried it. And we've had an opportunity to stop at them. All of our tasting locations have food that is out of this world. So
what are a couple of the others? Give me an example of one that I might have driven by and not thought about, because I'm a food-oriented person. I can hardly drive by a food place without trying it. So give me a hint of a couple
of those.
Absolutely.
So we go to the Twilight Cafe. A lot of people have heard of it, have been by it, but not ever been inside.
I'm one of those, yeah.
And they have the most amazing adobo burrito that is the creation of Catherine Costoble, who is one of the owners. And it's her own recipe, her own making, and it is out of this world. So that's just one of the options, one of the tasting locations that we have. We're going to be trying some, and I don't want to give too much away, but we're going to be trying some taku wings. And if you're not familiar with taku wings, those are the smoked salmon fins that are right, the fins that are right underneath the collar. And a lot of people look at that as throwaway food, but it has got the richest, most wonderful flavors, and it's really good and high in omega-3 fatty acids, and the flavors just are amazing.
Where do you
it.
Find those in town?
Taku Smokeries.
My mouth is watering, truly.
And, of course, not everyone in town has had the rhubarb sherbet or rhubarb sorbet from Copa, and that's one of our stops and treats as well.
Lucy, what was the favorite place for you?
One of the favorite spots for me was actually going to the Salt Cave. I absolutely love that place and have really personally benefited from some of the benefits from the salt, from the pink Himalayan sea salt. So to me, that turned out to be a delight that, you know, was completely unexpected.
So you're both partners in this business that you purchased. How have you divided up the roles of who does what? And have each of you owned a business before? That can be daunting.
So I have owned a business before. I'm one of the owners for Juno Limousine, and we actually incorporate Juno Limousine into our tour for a short jaunt from one spot to another. And as far as dividing duties, you know, we have really put our heads together on almost every single level of this. I've got some background in marketing, and Lucy has got some background in the teaching field. And so we put that together, and it just really complements each other, and we're great partners, I think.
Lucy, and Karen mentioned a background in teaching. Will you be giving, I hate to use the word lecture, because it will more likely be a conversation, but what will you be helping participants learn about on the tour?
Well, a lot of the things that we looked at for learning about were just some local history things. We were interested in mining, so we kind of looked at that. We were interested in a lot of the cultural pieces with our Twilight Cafe connection. There's a Filipino history in town that a lot of people don't necessarily know, whereas, you know, the first Filipinos arrived way back in, like, 1850 and even before that. And that's just exciting because, you know, I grew up here and, you know, had steam buns and all kinds of, you know, pans it, and hadn't really considered the historical aspects of that. So for me, that was pretty exciting.
What will be some of the cultural aspects that you will incorporate that have to do with indigenous peoples here?
So I was born and raised here, and I am half Tlingit. So for me, you know, that's just pretty exciting for me to explore my own background and to talk about, say, even just the tram and how that was started by the Gold Belt Corporation, or to even stop and look at our beautiful new Sobolov building and some of the beautiful artwork that's, you know, just even presented on the outside of the building. It's very exciting for me.
In fact, I have noticed as I've become more aware, there are quite a few public displays, say, of totem carvings that people might not be aware of. There's one right around the corner in the backyard of our city museum, and there are a couple stunning ones over at the Department of Education. And it's interesting how much public art we really do have of the local native culture here.
We do, and we actually highlight some of the local native heroes or heroines, like Elizabeth Bratrovich, and talk about some of those pieces as well. So we incorporate native histories and legends from the past, as well as our current history that the natives are making in Juneau every single day today. So it's pretty exciting to incorporate the past, the present, and the different cultural aspects as well.
Will it just be the two of you giving the tours, or are you taking on employees? How's that going to work? I mean, if it's super popular, you might have to have some helpers.
That would be fun to grow and have some helpers. For right now, it's Karen and I, and we are having a blast.
Now, I have understood that most of the successful excursions or activities, as they call them, have to go through the cruise ship itself in order to snag those participants and patrons. How are you two going about getting your clientele?
So we're doing independent travelers primarily right now. We are working closely with Uncruise Adventures and doing bookings through them, not directly through them, but in partnership with them. And then also on TripAdvisor, and we're getting set up with Expedia. We're doing Facebook. It's a multi-pronged approach. We've joined Alaska Travel Industry Association, the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau, and the list goes on.
How long is the tour? What should somebody expect, and are you standing the whole time?
So it's about a 3.5-hour tour. You are not standing the whole time or walking the whole time. There's actually sitting spots and potty stops, and it's a pretty relaxed pace, even if you're not super fit or don't feel like you can do, 2.5 miles straight. It's really fine because we really don't have that long of stretches in between each tasting location, and at most of them you'll have an opportunity to have a seat and relax and enjoy the special foods that are being presented.
We're talking with Karen Wright and Lucy Nelson, who are the new owners of Alaskan Food Tours that will not only include food, but will include cultural and historical information. Karen, before we went on the air, you talked about your business also supporting a nonprofit here in town. Do you want to talk about that?
You know, we really feel strongly that feeding our brains and feeding our bellies is great, but we also need to feed back our support to the community. And in an effort to do that, we've actually made a commitment to donating a portion of the proceeds of every single tour that we give to the Glory Hole.
That should be, I think, attractive to local people who are aware of that service as well. If folks want to find you, Lucy, where do they go to sign up or to call or to look online and learn more?
So we have a website, and that is AlaskanFoodTours.com. And our phone number here is 907-780-3663. We also have a toll-free number, 855-780-3663.
And 3663 is food, so it's 780 food.
That makes it easy to remember. And what is the cost for the 3.5-hour food cultural history tour?
So currently our costs are at $129, but for the month of July, and especially for locals, we have a Facebook special. And so you can join our Facebook group and follow our Facebook page. And the special is Memorial Day 2016. So you can get a 40% discount and come and join the tour and see what it's all about.
And that is just through Facebook then?
Actually, so you can book online on our website anytime and put in that discount code, and that was Memorial Day 2016.
And just a reminder to listeners, their website is Alaskan, not Alaska food. So Alaskan Food Tour. And is it tour, just not plural?
Alaskan Food Tours with an S on the end, .com.
Very good. What would you like to add? What have I missed?
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for inviting us to come on. And I think that people around Juneau, they go around their daily lives and they see what's out there to be seen and they try the different places. But it's really fun to play tourist in your own backyard and come and see a different view. You're going to learn some historical pieces that you probably didn't know about Juneau. Learn about the first excursion that Joe Juneau and Richard Harris went on to find gold in Juneau. Most people don't realize that that wasn't when they discovered gold with Chief Cowie. Learn about some other bits and pieces of Juneau history that may not be common knowledge.
We do have lots of, no pun intended, lots of nuggets of fascinating history. Well, the tour sounds both delicious and full of insight. So thanks for sharing that with us. We're talking with Karen Wright and Lucy Nelson, who are the new owners of Alaskan Food Tours. You can find them online at that very name or give them a call locally at 780-FOOD. Congratulations. Hope it works well.
Thanks so much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 20th of June, 2016. It was on this day, 1977, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline began to pump oil
For the first time, the largest private construction project ever completed in United States history, 800 miles long, a pipeline 48 inches in diameter, going over three mountain ranges, crossing 34 major rivers, including the Yukon, pumping almost 2 million barrels of crude oil every day, traveling through the pipe at about 7 miles an hour to the port of Valdez. It's the birthday of the biochemist Frederick Gowland Hopkins, born in Sussex, England, 1861. Got his degree in chemistry, and in 1901, Hopkins discovered the amino acid tryptophan. He studied diet and its effect on the body's metabolism and concluded that essential amino acids, which the body needs to produce its own proteins, was not made by the body but must be consumed as part of the diet, that there are elements in food that animals need to survive, which he called necessary nutrient factors, but we know them today as vitamins. It's the birthday of Vikram Seth, born in Calcutta, 1952, author of A Suitable Boy, the longest single-volume work of fiction in English since 1747. And it's the birthday of the guitarist Chet Atkins, born in Luttrell, Tennessee, 1924, who said, "Back then nobody had any money. We were so poor, and everybody around us was so poor, that it was the 40s before any of us knew there had been a depression." Here's a poem by Scott Owens, "On the Days I Am Not My Father." I don't yell, I don't hold inside the day's supply of frustrations. My hands stay open all day. I don't wake tired and sore, dazed from senseless, panicking dreams. On the days I am not my father, I hold my son when he cries. Let him touch my face without flinching, lie down with him until he falls asleep. Realize that just because he has a sharp tongue, just because he's sometimes mean, just because he's smarter than me, doesn't mean he'll become my father. On the days I am not my father, holding you is enough, until holding you is no longer enough for either of us. I listen well. I let things go unfinished, in an order I didn't plan. My mouth is relaxed. My teeth don't hurt. My face stays a healthy shade of pink all day. On the days I am not my father, I don't fill the silence with my own irrational rants. I don't resent the voices of others. I don't make fun of you to make myself feel better. On the days I am not my father, I don't care who wins or loses. The news can't ruin my day. I water plants, I cook, I laugh at myself. I can imagine living without my beard, with my hair cut, without the fear of looking too much like my father. On the days I am not my father, I romp and play. I don't compare myself with everyone else. The night is always long enough. I like how much I am like my father. A poem by Scott Owens, "On the Days I Am Not My Father," from The Fractured World, published by Main Street Rag and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by LegalZoom. Resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juneau, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and Stretch Aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. We have the pleasure now of having online with us Diana Martin, who is the author of a book called A Couch Named Marilyn, My Big Fat Mess Called PTSD. Welcome, Diana, to the program. I'm Lori, and glad to have you with us.
Thank you for inviting me, Lori.
So, Diana, let me ask you first off, where are you right now? Because I know that you were an Alaska resident for 27 years, including in Juneau for a good number of those. Where are you residing now?
Yes, right now I live in Massachusetts outside of Boston.
Well, welcome to our program. I did read the book and found your story very compelling. Can you do a short summary of it for our listeners so that they know what we're talking about as we discussed your quite incredible experience?
Yes, it, as you said, it, the story has many threads to it, but basically my intent was to draw a picture of what it is like for someone to go through a traumatic event and to see the changes that occur in one's life, whether it is psychological, emotional, physical, because I think there are so many people these days that are walking around in a trauma state. I think that a great example is what happened in Orlando last week and all of the people that have been affected by that. And I think that often PTSD is just four letters. And so my intention with writing the book was to really describe from my point of view what it was like to be victimized by someone who had harmful intent, and then to learn how to work with that and rebuild a life after that kind of victimization.
Let's fill in our audience as to what exactly happened to you and when. You had moved from Alaska to the Austin area and were pursuing, it sounded like, really a dream that you had, and that was to buy cute homes that needed some tender, loving care and to provide that and then to sell them. Why don't you talk about when that was so that people have an appreciation about the timing of your economic investment and risk at the time, and then exactly what happened to you?
I did move to Austin. I wanted to see what it was like to live in a sunny, warm place. And I did invest in small homes, and I had been renovating homes, excuse me, for years, and decided to turn this into a business. And it was doing very well. However, as you said, the timing was very important about this. This was back in 2008. When the recession hit, when there were a lot of problems with mortgages and housing financing. And so I ended up owning three houses at one time and instantly got into a situation where there were no buyers looking for houses. No one was really willing to invest at that time. So I was in a desperate situation, and I was in one of the houses one day, and there was a for sale sign in the yard, and a man came to the house saying that he wanted to look at it in terms of an investment. And as it turns out, when he got into the house and realized that I was a single woman alone there, he pulled out a gun and held it to my head and demanded, of all things, money from me, which was quite ironic at the time because I didn't have any. And to make a very long, complicated story short, a battle ensued. I decided that my best shot was to try to defend myself, and I did turn on him and fight with him physically, and he never did shoot me. However, he pistol whipped me and beat me quite badly. However, I was able to escape from him. I was able to get out of the house and seek help from a neighbor. So that is the short story about the assault that occurred that led to my journey working with PTSD.
Just to jump to the end quickly for our audience, thankfully, that individual was later sentenced to 35 years for a number of crimes, which very much included his battery of you. Talk a little bit about the name of the book, A Couch Named Marilyn.
Yes. Marilyn was a voluptuous, curvaceous, gorgeous white leather sofa that I owned at the time of the attack. And after the aftermath of anything that is traumatic, I think is a very important piece to whether we find a way to heal and work through it, or we find a way to really honestly feel victimized, because I understand why people can't crawl out of a hole like that. It's a really quite a horrifying experience. So I decided, I made a conscious decision to retreat to Maryland and to just lie down and do nothing, which is quite an un-American, un-Western way of dealing with problems. And so I bonded a relationship with Marilyn where I spent a tremendous amount of time just being and not doing and learning about myself and my mind and how I might actually grow from this experience. So Marilyn ended up being a great friend and nurturer to me.
Was this also a symptom of depression? I ask that because knowing folks who have experienced that illness, sleep is respite. Rest is respite.
Yes, that's an excellent point, Lori. And it's very difficult to do when your mind is so wound up in reliving an experience over and over again. So any sort of rest or sense of relaxation is a rare experience at that time. And certainly situational depression and anxiety were prominent in my experience. And so having that counterpoint of just lying still and being ended up being helpful for me.
The challenge, of course, was that you then were not making any money, and your houses were about to be repossessed. How did you manage then to, shall we say, get up off the couch?
Very slowly, until life forced me to, because you're correct, the banks quickly began foreclosing on many people like myself who were unable to make our payments. Early on in the recession, the banks were scrambling. They decided to take a lot of houses back. Later on, they realized they had an inventory that was so vast that they were unable to really sell these homes for any sort of value, so they ended up allowing many homeowners to stay in their houses for a long time. But in my case, it was a matter of a couple months before I needed to leave my home. And I was desperate, because having worked in the real estate field, there was no work at that point. So there were many people looking for jobs. And I decided to go back to school and become a paralegal so that I could do real estate transactions and paralegal work such as that. So that took about a year in the course of my life. And then I ended up moving back to Alaska to work as a real estate paralegal for the state, and I worked there in Fairbanks for 4 years before leaving Alaska.
You talk about the, I think it was the, I hesitate to say the Department of Law or the Sheriff's Department in Austin, but they did provide support for counseling. And you talk quite frankly about the challenges of getting into counseling in terms of where your head was at and whether or not that would work. And you talk about EMDR. Can you explain what that is and what you did or did not find helpful about counseling for those who perhaps have experienced or are experiencing PTSD?
Yes. I feel very fortunate that I was provided with the opportunity to go into counseling almost immediately after the assault, and I feel that that had a great benefit in the long term because I can see how this kind of experience, as I mentioned before, repeats itself over and over in one's mind. And EMDR is a type of therapy that actually uses eye movement to reprogram one's mind and to learn how to stop that recording that goes on and on, a repeat of being the target in whatever circumstances you're in. And this was very difficult because it required going back to memories that were ones that I really wanted to forget. However, I had a very supportive and helpful therapist who worked with me, including worked with me through my doubts about the process because it just seemed so unlikely that it would be helpful. And yet, in the long run, I feel that it was a great step forward to move out of a pit of despair and to find other ways to work with my nervous system and with my emotions.
For those just joining us, we are talking with Diana Martin. She is a former Juneau resident and an Alaska resident for 27 years who has just written a book called A Couch Named Marilyn, My Big Fat Mess Called PTSD. One of the things that you note, Diana, that you appreciated about your counselor is that she did not give you advice. And I'm a person who's want to do that, to want to fix situations and to help others. And you really recoiled from people who were telling you how to get fixed and how to fix the situation. Talk about that a little bit for those of us who love to give advice and think, oh, we're so helpful. And for those who perhaps have been through an experience that has been traumatizing to them, how did you feel about that? And what can you say to those who are trying to be helpful?
Well, first of all, I was definitely one of those people also. And so I recognized myself in what I was experiencing. And what felt so difficult about it was that I, in addition to, you know, losing my business and my homes and having a traumatic experience, it ended up being a domino effect of difficulties for many years. And what I realized is that when we try to fix someone, it's really about making ourselves feel better. My situation was so difficult and desperate that people who even loved me unintentionally gave me unsolicited advice that ended up really minimizing the vast array of challenges that I was facing and also ended up often sounding like platitudes. So I learned so much about that in terms of being a witness for people and listening to them and understanding that they have probably already considered just about every solution that is possible. But life isn't that simple. And sometimes I found that the greatest help that I had were by people who would just listen and not assume that they could put themselves in my shoes. And the ones who were able to do that ended up being the greatest support in my life, because any suggestion seemed to imply that I had done something wrong or I was doing something wrong and there was something that I could do to fix it. And it really was on such a grand scale that there wasn't any sort of simple fix to anything.
Diana, we have about a minute left. If one of our listeners has experienced trauma, and frankly, I think probably more people have than we'll ever know, because as you've noted, people walk around with it buried inside. Briefly, what advice would you give to someone, and I know this is a little ironic because we're talking about giving advice and how that's not helpful,
yeah.
But what encouragement would you provide to somebody who is struggling?
One of the points of the story is to say that we really can climb out of the abyss of trauma or depression, and there is no recipe for it. It is a matter of finding our own core strength and then finding a few supporters around us, whether it is a counselor, a loved one, someone who can just bear witness and listen and support, because we have to find our own path out of something like this, and it is possible.
And as your book shares in compelling detail, it takes a long time. There's nothing quick or magical about it. We're talking with Diana Martin, the author of A Couch Named Marilyn. Diana, thank you so much for revealing and sharing so much in your book as well as through this interview.
It was a pleasure, Lori. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
Checking in the weather again, it will be cloudy throughout the rest of the week with some intermittent showers, isolated showers, and a chance of rain tapering off toward the end of the week. Looking at tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Ben Brown will be here. He'll talk with Jeff Brady about Volume 2 of the Skagway Police Blotter Collection. We'll continue our look at summer activities with Derek Grimes from Coastal Helicopters and Tyler Hickman from Icy Strait Point. And we'll talk with Don Habiger, Community Coordinator, about the Juneau Reentry Coalition. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and More. You know, live at 3 on KTOO and repeated at KRNN online at 4.